Translation. Sri Suta Goswami said, due to the mercy of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who acts wonderfully, Maharaj Parikshit, though struck by the weapon of the son of Drona in his mother's womb, could not be burned. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The sages of Naimisharanya became struck with wonder after hearing about the wonderful administration of Maharaj Parikshit, especially in reference to his punishing the personality of Kali and making him completely unable to do any harm within the kingdom. Suta Goswami was equally anxious to describe Maharaj Parikshit's wonderful birth and death. And this verse is stated by Suta Goswami to increase the interest of the sages of Naimisharanya. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So I would like to seek the blessings and permission of all the Vaishnavas to share something on this wonderful verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll just read the translation again. Sri Suta Goswami said, due to the mercy of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who acts wonderfully, Maharaj Parikshit, though struck by the weapon of the son of Drona in his mother's womb, could not be burned. So Suta Goswami is explaining here to the sages in Naimisharanya how the Supreme Lord acts wonderfully. Adbhuta Karmana. He acts wonderfully. Krishna acts wonderfully. This is a special nature, special feature of the Supreme Lord. He's always acting wonderfully. And here, the explanation given by Suta Goswami is describing how Maharaj Parikshit could not be burned in the womb of his mother. His mother, Uttara, was carrying Maharaj Parikshit at the time when Ashwatthama shot the deadly Brahmastra. So when did this happen? So if we just rewind a little bit, so this would have been described, I think, in chapter 7 or in chapter 8 in Canto 1, where the Pandavas, after the war, after Duryodhan had been struck on the thigh by Bhima, and Ashwatthama was raging with anger. Ashwatthama was raging with fury and vengeance. He could not forget how his father was beheaded or was killed by Drishtadyumna when he was doing some meditation. He felt this was such an unfair way for his father to die. He was so, so angry. And then, after hearing about the way Duryodhan was struck beneath the waist, which is not allowed in the code of warfare when it comes to mace fighting, and Bhima struck him below the waist on the instruction of Krishna. This was done on Krishna's instruction. Why? Because Krishna is Adbhuta Karmana. He's acting wonderfully. Krishna's always acting wonderfully. Actually, on the night before the final day of the war, after Karna had been killed, Duryodhan was he was in a bit of disarray. Everyone had left. Bhishma, Drona, Karna, everyone, all of his strength, who he was depending on. They had all left. So now he's thinking, what am I going to do? And his mother, Gandhari, had said to him, you come and see me, Duryodhan. You come and see me tonight, but make sure when you present yourself to me, you present yourself to me in the way that I saw you when you were first born. So she didn't say it in straight language, but what she meant was, see me wearing no clothes. And what she was planning, what she was going to do, was take off her blindfold, because in her eyes she had developed a lot of shakti. All these years of austerity had given her so much shakti, so much mystic power, and she wanted to protect Duryodhan with this mystic power. So she said to Duryodhan, you come and see me tonight. I will protect your whole body, head to toe, with this mystic power coming from my eyes. So Duryodhan was going to see her, and Krishnasya Adbhuta Karmana. Krishna, who acts wonderfully, turns up just before Duryodhan is about to visit his mother. So he's just about to visit his mother, and Krishna sees Duryodhan and is like, hey, Duryodhan, what's going on here? Put some clothes on, man. You know, it's like, why is your clothes not on? And Duryodhan says to Krishna, I'm going to see my mother, etc. You know, she's told me to come like this. And Krishna says, yeah, okay, I get the point, Duryodhan, but at least cover your private area. You know, don't just go fully naked, just cover your private area. So Duryodhan's like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense, you know. So then he puts some loincloth around his waist and he goes to visit Gandhari. And when Gandhari sees him, she unfolds, she takes the blindfold off and she sees Duryodhan, and she's bestowing all her shakti, all her power into Duryodhan to protect his body. Duryodhan was wearing that loincloth, and Gandhari is thinking, uh-oh, what's happened here? It's that Krishna again, that Krishna who's just not letting us make the plan we want to make. You know, do we ever feel like this, that we want to enjoy, and we kind of know the way we want to enjoy isn't the right way to enjoy, but because Krishna is so wonderful, Adbhuta Karmana, because Krishna is so wonderful, he doesn't kind of let us. He doesn't let us. It's not there for us. We're not allowed to enjoy in a certain way sometimes. So Gandhari understood straight away that, okay, this is Krishna. What to do? You should have come fully naked, Duryodhan, as I had told you, but this Krishna, what to do? And then Duryodhan went, after that he went, and the next day was the last battle, if you like, between Bhima and Duryodhan. So when Bhima and Duryodhan, they're having a one-on-one mace fight, every time Bhima was struck a blow on Duryodhan, nothing was happening to him. Nothing was happening. And Duryodhan, every time he struck a blow on Bhima, Bhima was getting fatigued. Bhima was getting injured. And every time Bhima was hitting Duryodhan, nothing. You know, it was like it was invincible because his whole body was protected. So in one sense, what we can see here is that the fight between Duryodhan and Bhima was an unfair fight. This was an unfair fight because Duryodhan was fully protected with this Shakti and Bhima wasn't. And therefore, the fight that was taking place was actually not a fair fight. So then, after some time, Krishna had told Arjun what will need to be done in terms of he would need to be struck beneath the waist. And Arjuna then indicated to Bhima that, you know, he pointed to the thigh and said, this is where, indicating to Bhima that this is where you must strike Duryodhan. And then he struck those blows on Duryodhan's thigh. Now, sometimes people question, was Krishna being fair? How could Krishna do this? But here Suta Goswami is explaining, Krishna is adbhuta karmana. He's acting wonderfully. He's acting wonderfully because Krishna has said, Konteya pratijanahi name bhakta pranashyati, that declare it boldly, O son of Kunti, that my devotee never perishes. Krishna always protects his devotees. And here what we can see is Krishna is in one sense leveling the score because Duryodhan was acting unfairly in the first place. He was fighting with all this extra armor that wasn't told to Bhima. And because all these pastimes of the Lord, they're multidimensional, we also see different learning points how Duryodhan was receiving the reaction for the way he was inviting Draupadi onto his lap at the assembly. When Draupadi was the attempted disrobing of Draupadi, and Duryodhan said, come, sit on my lap. How vile. What a terrible thing to say. Really disgusting thing to say. And for this, he was getting his reaction that he was being struck on the thigh. And Krishna, adbhuta karmana, he's acting wonderfully. He's arranging everything. He is arranging everything to protect his devotees. This is Krishna. So when we see here where Suta Goswami is describing how he protected Maharaj Parikshit. So after Duryodhan was struck and Ashwatthama was like, oh my God, first these Pandavas have killed my father in such an unfair way. He's meditating and they killed him in his meditation. And now they have struck Duryodhan beneath the waist. Again, very unfair. Ashwatthama's raging with envy. So Ashwatthama, what does he do? He does the most heinous act. He kills the five sons of Draupadi. They were all sleeping in the tent in the Pandava camp, and he killed all of them. He beheaded all of them. And he took the heads of the five sons of Draupadi to Duryodhan and said, look, I have killed the Pandavas. And Duryodhan was getting excited, thinking that the Pandavas were killed. And then after Ashwatthama shows him one of the heads, who's the son of Bhima, Duryodhan realizes, look, this is not the five Pandavas. Why did you kill these boys? They haven't done anything. He actually says to Ashwatthama, this is ridiculous. Why did you do such a thing? So even Duryodhan, who we see in the Mahabharata time after time after time, is doing one evil act after another. He has tried to poison the Pandavas, tried to burn them alive. He cheated them from their kingdom. This is Duryodhan's evil attitude throughout the Mahabharata. But still, he found what Ashwatthama did bad. Now, if Duryodhan thinks something is bad, it must be beyond bad. It is way out there. So this situation led Ashwatthama to think, oh my God, I did this to please Duryodhan. I killed these guys to please Duryodhan, to do something for Duryodhan. And even he's not happy. How bad must the Pandavas be feeling right now? They're going to come and chase me down. So Ashwatthama starts to go, he gets on his chariot, and he's like trying to get away from the scene. And then meanwhile, it was one of the cooks actually who escaped the Pandav tent, who comes and tells the Bhima and Arjuna, this is what has happened. These boys have been killed, and it was so devastating for them. And then straight away, and you can imagine Draupadi, her sons have been killed. She's so angry. And Arjuna says to Yudhishthira, just give me permission. I'm going to go chase him. Krishna himself then asked Yudhishthira Maharaj, please give me permission. This is Krishna, who acts wonderfully, the Supreme Lord. But he's still asking permission. He's still respecting the situation. He's respecting Maharaj Yudhishthira's position. And he's asking permission, can I also go with Arjuna? So Arjuna and Krishna, they're running after Ashwatthama. They find Ashwatthama, you know, his horse is tired, he's tired, everyone's tired. And he's like out of all energy. He hasn't slept all night because he's just, you know, doing this heinous killing. And then once Arjuna finds him and catches him, Arjuna just beats him to a pulp, just beats him. So he's absolutely like senseless. And Krishna's telling him, kill him, kill him, kill him. And Arjuna's saying, no, I'm not going to kill him yet. I need to ask the permission of the king. So Arjuna still spared him. He's just killed his son. But still, he wanted to do the right thing. He still wanted to do the right thing. This is Arjuna, who's full of dharma. He wanted to do the right thing. He had no real vengeance in him. He wanted to do the right thing. So he comes back. He tells, he brings the coward Ashwatthama to Draupadi and his brothers. And Draupadi, when she sees Ashwatthama, she says, my obeisance is to you, O son of Dronacharya. She says that to the killer of her sons. This is a pure devotees of the Lord. You know, sometimes it's unimaginable. How can they be so forgiving? But this is Draupadi's compassion. She was so... She didn't want, actually, she said, don't kill him. He needs to be respected. Your teacher, Dronacharya, you cannot kill the son of a Brahmana. Just let him go. Let him go. And the Pandavas were kind of coming around. They were understanding, okay, maybe we do need to let him go. But Bhima was having none of it. Bhima was like, just kill this guy. There is no... You cannot give any sympathy to someone like him. He hasn't even got any remorse in him. How can you let him go? But still, Draupadi and Arjuna, Yudhishthir, they decided that this is the best thing. And Krishna even said, actually, okay, fine. You can let him go. But at the same time, there was something, because there's like scriptural injunctions. You know, one thing is you must kill an aggressor. The other is you cannot kill the Brahmana, you know. So how to go about this? So then Arjuna cut off the jewel on his head and cut his hair and disheveled him and made him look like a comedy show, a bit like how they made Rukmi look. So when they're looking disheveled, when they're looking a little when the fame and the power has all been bereft of them, this in one sense is no different to killing. So Ashwatthama, he's spared. But still, Ashwatthama, even after being spared, he's not letting go of everything. He's not kind of thinking, you know, wow, I've just killed their sons and they forgave me. And, you know, turn his life around. He didn't do that. He didn't take that time to introspect as to the mercy that had been given to him. He didn't take that time to really think about Krishnasya Adbhuta Karmana. Krishna, who's acting wonderfully, has spared me. He didn't think that these Pandava brothers have spared me. He didn't think that Draupadi has spared me. And this is something we can also think for ourselves also. Are we seeing the mercy that's being given to us? Are we thinking about all the wonderful opportunities we're getting in Krishna consciousness, all the association we're getting, even on Zoom nowadays, but somehow or the other, we're getting to connect with devotees. Are we seeing the wonderful mercy that's coming out of this these situations in our life? Or are we going to become more and more and more and more feeling victimized? Are we going to just become more, this happened to me. How could this happen to me? How dare they do that to me? How dare they shame me? You know, are we going to take this time to really introspect? When we receive some mercy, when we receive forgiveness, how do we reciprocate with that forgiveness? How are we reciprocating with this mercy? How are we thinking about it? You know, when we come to Krishna consciousness and we hear things like, we must submit to the guru, we must submit to our authorities. Yes, it is right, we must submit to the guru, we must submit to the authorities. But it does not mean that we need to stop thinking. It doesn't mean that we just throw our intelligence out the window and not think anymore. So what's important is we still use our intelligence. We still use our intelligence. We still think. And this way we'll be living a life in the mode of goodness. We live a life in the mode of goodness. And in the mode of goodness, it's described, Krishna describes, it's prakasha, it is self-illuminating. This knowledge becomes self-illuminating. And mode of goodness means that we want to think before we act. See, mode of passion is we act before we think. Mode of goodness is we want to think and then we want to act. And mode of ignorance, we're kind of not doing anything. No thinking, no acting. But in mode of goodness, we want to think before we act. And if we think about the mercy we're receiving, if we think about the blessings we're getting, if we introspect to how much of this do I actually deserve? How much of this do I actually deserve? And how much is actually being given to me? And when we think about what I actually deserve, we can think about, you know, who am I? You know, when we first think about who am I, and straight away we think, Hari Bol, spirit soul, Hari Bol, I'm a spirit soul. This is true, we're a spirit soul. And who am I in my condition sense? Who am I in my condition sense? Who am I? You know, am I envious? You know, and we don't have to label ourselves like this. We can label our mind like this. Is my mind envious? Does my mind feel jealous? Sometimes when we label ourselves something, I am this, I am that, that's sometimes not very helpful. But when we label our mind in this way, my mind is envious, my mind is like this, my mind finds fault in others, and I criticize devotees. When we introspect and think, who am I? Then we might, then what will happen, naturally, we start thinking about it. And with these thoughts, we can really understand that the mercy we're receiving is actually so much more than what I deserve. So this pausing, pausing, you know, in the material world, if you pause, it's like, oh, what are you doing, man? What are you doing with your life? You know, you're spacing out. You know, sometimes like you're spacing out. You know, even sometimes with devotees, it's like, hey, you're spacing out, man. And actually, there's a fine line between mode of ignorance spacing out and mode of goodness being thoughtful. But if we're spending some time being thoughtful, being introspective, we can really think about who I really am. And if I have these tendencies, if I have resentment towards someone, if I have a grudge against someone, if I'm not being able to forgive someone, what can I do? And spending this time, maybe even writing it down, and really trying to connect with Krishna. Trying to connect with Krishna and expressing to him that this is me, but I want you. I want you. I want you, but this is me. Please help me change. And when we can become honest with ourselves, then there's real hope for change. Then there's real hope for being grateful for the mercy we're receiving. Otherwise, it's a very difficult road. Spiritual life is a very difficult road because we'll just get dragged down by the mode of passion and mode of ignorance. If we're just all action nonstop without spending time to think about where we're going and what we're doing and who I really am and where I want to be and who I want to be and how I can get there, spending time speaking with devotees and getting their association and then thinking about what they've said and thinking about how I can apply this into my life. If we don't spend this time, then we're on fast forward. And what happens is all these different anarthas keep coming, and rather than trying to work on them, we just kind of work with them. And when we work with these anarthas, what happens is our lower nature will start to come out because we're just working with these anarthas. So for example, if I feel envious towards someone, then if I work with this anartha that I'm feeling envious, and I don't do anything about it, what will I do next? I'll try and pull this person down. I'll try and drag this person down. This person is doing something better than me. I want what they've got. Let me pull them down. How will I pull them down? I'll criticize them because that's all I can do, you know? And what happens when we criticize? I'll be honest. I remember it was a few weeks ago, and there's this devotee who I've been feeling a little envious. Oh, look, he's doing so much in Krishna consciousness. He's doing this, doing that, and I was kind of feeling a bit envious, you know, like he's doing so much, and look at me. And then I was thinking, okay, I need to appreciate this person. You know, I need to appreciate this person. I was trying to appreciate that person, and I was talking with someone about this, and then I realized I said something critical. Said one thing, a little critical. And the next morning, I remember waking up thinking, I feel so much more envious of this person now. I feel so much more envious. Why do I feel so much more envious? Because I tried to criticize. So actually, when we work with our anarthas, what happens is rather than working through them, rather than getting past them, we have these anarthas and we're living our life with these anarthas, we just fan them more and more and more. We're envious, we criticize, and when we criticize, I remember that next morning, I just felt so much more envious, and I was thinking, why did I do that? Why did I do that? Why did I stoop to that level? When I do that, I get this feeling that I'm not feeling the motivation for Krishna consciousness because of this envy. So this criticism will fan the envy. So what we can do if we spend time to think about these things, if we read the prayers of the acharyas, wow, they really help us introspect. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Amara Jivana, he's saying, I'm para sukhe dukhi. I am para dukhi sukha. You know, he's saying, I'm feeling happy at another person's misery. And another person's misery is a source of great delight for me. And if we think about those prayers, if we read those prayers and we think, is that me? When someone falls away from the path of Krishna consciousness, someone that maybe we've been internally competing with, and that person falls away from Krishna consciousness, rather than feeling the compassion, rather than feeling the love, are we feeling that, I'm better than him. Look, he's gone. I'm still here. Hey, Look at me, I'm still here. That guy is gone. You know, are we feeling like that? Are we feeling these things? And if we read the prayers of the Acharyas, then we can understand more and more who we actually are, because we think, actually, I do have this. I am feeling happy when that person's feeling miserable. I am feeling sad when that person's happy. You know, that person's achieved something and I'm feeling bara sukhe dukhi. That person's happiness is miserable for me. And if we can introspect and understand this is me, if we can understand I do have some envy, if we can understand I do have this greed, I do find it hard to put my hand in my pocket and give a donation. You know, if we do understand that this is me, then we can really try and work on it. Then we can become humble. We can then appreciate that even though I'm like this, we can still appreciate the mercy that Krishna is giving to us. We can really start to appreciate that, wow, I'm like this, and you are still giving me so much. Nama Rucha, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. Is my internet okay, Sankirtan Priya Prabhu?
Just for a second, blipped okay. Out, and you're back again with us.
Okay. Thank you. Kshama aparada nama ruchi diya, that please forgive my offenses and afford me a taste for the holy name. Kshama aparada ruchi diya. And Krishna, who is adbhuta karmana, he'll do that because he's so wonderful. He'll give us a taste for the holy name. He'll help us become free from offenses because we can appreciate him. And in this mood of appreciation, so many wonderful things can happen. So many brilliant things can happen. We can start to see Krishna in everything. And Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra, Sarvam Chamai Pashyati. That, you know, you see Krishna, everyone who sees me everywhere, who sees me in everything. Tasyaham na pranashyati, sacha me na pranashyati. He's always with me and I'm always in him. So if we can see Krishna in everything and everywhere, we'll always be with Krishna and Krishna will always be with us. And how can we do that? If we have this mood to appreciate what we've been given, if we can appreciate what we have received, if we can truly appreciate it, and we'll be able to see Krishna in everything. Like Bibal Mangal Thakur, he was so infatuated with a prostitute that even in his father's funeral, he couldn't focus. His father has died and he couldn't focus on the last rites. He couldn't focus on the final ceremony. All he was thinking is, I need to get out of here. And I need to go and see Chintamani. I need to go and see her. I need to go and enjoy with her. No bearing of anything else. So illusioned. So overtaken by lust, he just wanted to be with her. And what did he do? We all know the story. It was a stormy night. It was raining. There was a river. He had to cross the river, even though there was such a storm. And he gets to her place, and she's closed everything. And she, because she doesn't think he's going to come on such a stormy night. The day, you know, his father just passed away. He's not going to come now. But he's still got there. And then he climbs up a snake, you know, to get to her. Just doing all sorts of madness. All sorts of madness. And then he gets there. And then when he gets there, the prostitute Chintamani said, if only you did this, if only you had this much motivation for Krishna. If only you had this much motivation for Krishna. And what did Bibal Mangal Thakur do? He actually could see that, okay, this is a sign. I need to go to Vrindavan. I need to check to be with Krishna. But this is because he could be thankful. He didn't say to the prostitute, well, you're just a prostitute. Who the hell are you to tell me? Who the hell are you to tell me what to do? Who are you to give me instruction on God and Krishna? Who are you? You know, sometimes we feel like that. You know, I've been in the movement so many years and this new bhakta comes and says to me, Prabhu, maybe you need to just improve in this area or that area. And the first reaction, who do you think you are, man? Who are you? Bimal Mangal Thakur, when he heard this from Chintam, he didn't just start to think you're just a prostitute. Who the, you know, he thought, okay, fine. He could see that actually, he could, he started to become grateful. He could see that actually, you know, what I'm doing is, and it's not that straight away, even for Bimal Mangal Thakur, that straight away he became an enlightened devotee. Because then on the way, you know, he got attracted to someone else. He got attracted to another lady. And then after becoming attracted to her and then and telling her husband that, you know, I'm attracted to your wife, you know, there's no kind of bearing on what's right and what's wrong, no etiquette, none of that stuff. And then he just, you know, he just got some hairpins and just blinded himself and put it in his eyes, blinded himself because he realized that these eyes is what's causing me problem. Now, the lesson here is not to blind ourselves. the lesson here is that if we act with gratitude, then we're on our journey. You know, we're on our journey. And along that journey, we still have our inner obstacles. Like Bimal Mangal Thakur, he became attracted again. We still have our obstacles. But if we still remain introspective, if we still remain thoughtful about what's happening around us, then what happens is we can appreciate more and more this mercy that's being given to us. And this is what Ashwatthama didn't do. This is what Ashwatthama didn't do. When Ashwatthama was released by the Pandavas, so he's released, he's gone, and everyone's kind of moving on with their life, and including Krishna. He's like, okay, I must go now. I must go back to Dwarka. Everyone's kind of missing me there. I should go back to Dwarka. So Krishna's about to go back to Dwarka. And when he's about to go back to Dwarka, Brahmastra weapons get released. And who was it that's released these Brahmastra weapons? Ashwatthama. He's just been spared his life. He's just killed not only the sons of Draupadi's brother, Dishyumna. He's killed everyone in the Pandava camp, everyone. He's been spared his life. He's been forgiven. He's been given mercy. He's been given another chance. But instead of appreciating what he got, instead of thinking about this wonderful mercy that's come upon me, he did it again. He only went and did it again. so he shot Brahmastra weapons. Five Brahmastra weapons he shot at the five Pandavas. And Krishna with his Sudarshan Chakra just neutralized all of those Brahmastra weapons. And the sixth Brahmastra was going to, like here what's been described in the verse, going to the womb of Uttara. Going to the womb of the of Uttara, who is Abhimanyu's wife. So therefore, this Parikshit, who was in the womb of Uttara, is the grandson of Arjuna. And Krishna, as the super soul in Ula Sarvasya Chaham Ridhi Shani Vishto, the super soul in all of our hearts, he decided that he wanted to protect this child in the womb. So he protected the embryo. Uttara was screaming, "Krishna, Krishna, even if I die, it's okay, but just save my embryo, save my son." And Krishna, as the super soul, protected Uttara. So this is Krishna. He acts wonderfully. He protected Uttara. He protected the Pandavas. And then he told them, like, now you don't have to worry. That was the end of Ashwatthama's powers. He's not going to bother you anymore. He assured them that this was it. And the Pandavas, with great faith, understood that, okay, fine. Nothing more can happen. Krishna will not allow Ashwatthama to try and hurt us again. But Uttara, when she's saved, she was still tired, she was still taking rest, so she still had to go through the after effects of this weapon being shot towards her. But then after she took rest and then she rejuvenated, and then, as we know later, Maharaj Parikshit came along, and we know the story of Maharaj Parikshit's life, as we've been hearing in the previous chapters. of the Bhagavatam. But Ashwatthama didn't really understand the mercy that had been given to him. He didn't understand that what Krishna is giving is very special. So what we are receiving is very special. What we're receiving in spiritual life is very special. When we are the association of devotees is very special. But if we don't observe that, you know, as Krishna explains in the Gita, that if we observe this, that what we're getting is very special, then we can really, really appreciate it. Now, how did he protect Uttara? As the super soul, Krishna is Upadrashta, he's Anumanta, he's the overseer, he is the permitter. So that means he's, as the permitter and overseer, that means that Krishna sanctions everything. Now, it doesn't mean that Krishna desires everything that happens to us, because he never takes away the free will of the jiva. That never happens, because he wants us to show love for him, and love can only be something from ourselves, from our free will. But he's Anumanta, he's the permitter. And as Krishna is the permitter and he's the overseer of everything, what this means is that nothing has come to us without the sanction of Krishna. Krishna has allowed whatever has happened to us to happen. Krishna has allowed that to happen. Whatever it is that is happening, Krishna has allowed it to happen. So in that way, we can understand Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, that everything comes from Krishna. Everything comes from Krishna because he's permitting everything to happen. If Krishna didn't want something to happen, it wouldn't happen. So if Ashwatthama was meant to kill Uttara, if Ashwatthama was meant to kill Maharaj Parikshit in the womb, then he would have been killed. But Krishna didn't permit that. And because Krishna didn't permit that, he can do wonderful things to make sure that things don't happen and things do happen. He made sure that Maharaj Parikshit wasn't killed because he didn't permit the killing of Maharaj Parikshit. So whatever is happening to us has been permitted by Krishna. It's been sanctioned by Krishna. So therefore we can think, actually, Krishna, what is the lesson I'm meant to learn from this? What is the lesson I'm meant to learn from this situation? How is it that you want me to react to this situation? How do you want me to react to this? And we can find a way to thank Krishna. Thank you, Krishna. I'm so sick right now that I can spend more time reading, or I can spend more time watching YouTube videos of Prabhupada memories, or whatever it is. But can we find that gratitude within our heart? Like Bibhor Mangal Thakur, he found the gratitude in his heart. He found the gratitude to Chintamani, the prostitute, and went to Vrindavan. And if we get this misery, if this misery comes to our life, if we find something that's coming to us, this misery should awaken some detachment. If we think about what's happening, if we introspect, this misery should lead us on this path to detach from these things, detach from the onslaughts of Maya, and make us understand more and more and more and more that what I really want is Krishna. By practicing this mood of introspection, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. So when we hear about Shravanam, we know Shravanam is hearing. When we think about Kirtanam, we know Kirtanam is chanting. And then Smaranam is remembering. And then sometimes we think about remembering. It's like, I remember Krishna. Krishna, you know, we're remembering Krishna. But actually, remembering is an action. Remembering is an action. Shravanam is an action. Kirtanam is an action. Why can't Smaranam be an action? You know, worshipping the deity is an action. So how can we act? We can introspect. We can use some time to think that this special thing that's come to me, this special opportunity that's come to me in Krishna consciousness, in spiritual life, I'm so grateful for it. And then the misery will come, but we'll be able to detach from that misery. We'll be able to, like Pingala, the prostitute in the 11th canto, same thing. She was seeking someone for that, a customer for that night, and she couldn't find someone. No one came. And she actually, what she wanted was a lover. She didn't want just someone for the night. She wanted, but she couldn't find anyone. She was trying to put herself out there, but she couldn't find. And she was so miserable. But that misery awakened some detachment in her. And then she realized that actually, no one is my lover except Krishna. You know, no one can really give me that full satisfaction. But if we don't think about it and we just act with our anartas, and we act, and then we act with these lower modes of passion, these lower modes of ignorance, and we don't come to the platform of mode of goodness, then spiritual life, it kind of becomes like quicksand. We're going up, then we're going down. We're going up and we're going down. We're going up and we're going down. But mode of goodness is the platform. It's like when you're getting on a train and you go on a train from Watford Junction and you want to go to Manchester. So if you want to go from Watford Junction to Manchester and they tell you get on platform 7 and then you go to platform 10 and you get on the train on platform 10, you're going the wrong direction. You're ending up somewhere else. You know, you might be going south instead of north. So it's like that. You know, you get to the train station, we come to Krishna consciousness, we might as well get on the right platform. You know, we've come to Krishna consciousness, let's get on the right platform. The platform is mode of goodness. And when we come to that platform of mode of goodness, then spiritual life becomes more accessible. And mode of goodness does mean pause sometimes. Pause before we act. Or pause, not even pause before we act. Pause is an act. Pausing is an action. And this pausing, this introspection, this thoughtfulness, what we can do with all this is we can internalize our scriptural knowledge. Because ultimately, it's our responsibility to internalize our scriptural knowledge. No one else can do that for us. Everyone can give us the gyan. Devotees can give us the gyan. It's up to us to take responsibility to make that vigyan. And we can do that by our service. Krishna reciprocates and that gyan becomes vigyan. And by our thoughtfulness, by our remembrance, by our introspection, that gyan becomes vigyan. And when that gyan becomes vigyan, when we get that realization, as Krishna describes, pratyaksha vagamam dharmyam susukam kartam avyayam, that this direct sense perception of our relationship with Krishna, we'll feel susukam kartam avyayam, we'll feel everlasting happiness, this happiness within. Otherwise, we'll be like Ashwatthama, just vengeful. All that, you know, and we're going to end here. Where did it start with Ashwatthama? It started with Arjuna is a better archer than me. When he was in the school with his father, with Dronacharya, he realized that yes, and Ashwatthama by his own right was a formidable warrior, but he realized that Arjuna was better than him. And because Arjuna was better than him, he always had this kind of thing, he's better than me, that competitive spirit. And because he didn't work on it, he didn't work on that competitive spirit. Where did it take him? It took him to that place of killing the Pandava's sons, of even after being forgiven, still trying to kill the Pandavas, still trying to kill Maharaj Parikshit. This is where it can start. But we've got an opportunity in Krishna consciousness to get on that platform of good mode of goodness and really access the mercy of Krishna. And then we'll be able to access here, like it says, Krishnasya Adbhuta Karmana, Krishna who acts wonderfully. We'll be able to see that Krishna is acting wonderfully. He's not against me. He loves me so much. So I think we'll stop here. So thank you all very much. Thank you so much for allowing me to share something. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Kanchanabhaja Prabhu. Wow, what a class. Amazing, Prabhu. So much information there, so many golden nuggets of instructions that you've given us, from introspection to mercy to compassion to how to actually do smaranam. Amazing, amazing, Prabhu. Thank you so much. So we did have one sort of clarification point here on the chat, is that does anartha equals tendencies? Our tendencies to do certain activities, our character traits that we obviously change.
Yeah, it's like it's like our unwanted desires. We don't want these things. Like envy, it's there. We don't want it. And if we don't act on it, it just plays in our mind, and then it comes, and pride. You know, I don't want to be proud. So, but these anartas, if we don't realize that they're there, if we don't understand who we are, we don't understand that these unwanted desires are there, then we just act on it. We become proud. It's like, oh yeah, look, you distributed so many books, and you did this and you did that, and we start feeling this is me, and we become proud, and then we can act on this. I can give you an example. So many years ago, I was in the ashram, so like around 2008, and we went on the book marathon. I remember we went on the book marathon, and me and another devotee, we were kind of competing for fourth place. Because, you know, like we were thinking like the top four get in the Champions League, as they say, you know, in the Premier League. So we were competing for fourth place because, you know, Sachi Kishore, Sutapa and Ananda Chaitanya, they're going to be the top three. So we're just like, can we get fourth place? So, and me and him were on the same team, and that makes things a little awkward, you know. And what I began to realize about myself was that I was distributing the books, and you know, there was no compassion for the fallen condition soul. There was no kind of anything about the actual service of distributing books and how merciful Krishna has been to give me this opportunity. I was just acting on my anarthas. So what was happening is this competitive spirit took over, and I just wanted to beat the other devotee. I just wanted to distribute more books than him. So it was kind of like this para sukha dukhi and para dukha sukha, that every time, you know, I'm on the streets, I'm distributing books, I'm trying to distribute books, but whenever I saw him distribute a book, I'd get sad. Honestly, I'm like, oh my God, he distributed a book. He's ahead of me. And every time he'd speak to someone, and like he'd spend 20 minutes talking to them, and they didn't take a book inside of it. He wasted 20 minutes, then he didn't distribute a book, you know. And then after some time, my head was just getting jarred. Realizing that I realized sometime later. It was I kind of realized. So I remember coming back to the temple. So we were in Leicester. I remember coming. There's the older temple with the Panchatattva deities, and I was saying, you know, I was thinking, I'm doing this, but I don't want to be like this. But still every day I would be like this, because it's just a quick, it's not really introspecting about me. It's not really introspecting about who I really am. It's not really getting into it. I was just kind of aware of it. But if we don't work on what we become aware of, we just kind of try to work with it. So I know I'm competitive. I know I've got pride, but I'm just working with it. And then it doesn't really matter, you know. And actually I did end up coming fourth. And what happened was amazing. I was miserable, and the other devotee who came fifth, he was happy, because he could actually go past the competition and was just happy he was distributing Prabhupada's books. I came fourth. I beat him, which was the whole leela that we were going through. I was going to say transcendental, but it definitely wasn't transcendental. We called it that at the time, but you can see it really wasn't. But the whole thing that took place, I was miserable because I realized that the whole mood in which I did the service wasn't nice. So when these anarthas, these unwanted desires, when they are creeping in, and we work with them instead of working on them, we start living a life of material. We actually live a materialistic life in Krishna consciousness, rather than trying to work towards a spiritual life in Krishna consciousness. And I hope that makes sense.
Wow, you're speaking directly to me there, I'm sure. We all do this. That previous clarification was from Dipesh and Jagruti.
Okay. Oh, Hare Krishna, Dipesh and Jagruti. Hare Krishna.
The next question we have is from Krishna Purna Mataji. And she's asking that when we suffer, we try to understand it's Krishna's mercy, like you explained in your class. But for us to learn something from this incident, how do we know what lesson to learn from this, so that we can introspect and therefore learn that lesson or not do it in the future?
Thank you, Krishna Purna Mataji. I think with this, rather than learning the lesson to then introspect, it could be the other way around, where the introspection helps us get the lesson. It's kind of like when we start introspecting in what's happening to us, and who, maybe someone's hurting us or a situation has come and it's affecting us. And if we write it, actually, it really it's really amazing if we start writing it, like if we journal it or something like that. And if we write through it, and we can, even in a mood to writing to Krishna, or writing in a sense that this is happening to me, or Krishna did this, or whatever. However, but if we go in that mood of really introspecting deeply, and especially when we write, it really makes a different, it gives a different perspective on it. Then as we are writing and venting out, because sometimes when we suffer, we do need to vent out. And actually, when we vent it out in introspection, we vent it all out, then, and suddenly as we're venting it out, what comes along is this reciprocation, this kind of understanding of where it's coming from and why am I feeling the misery. Like Pingala, she felt the misery, but that misery led to detachment. So if we vent out the misery, we vent out the suffering, then what starts to happen is we start to realize things from the other person's perspective. Yeah, we start to see things from the other person's perspective. And then what's amazing, what can happen is we start to think, oh, how is it for them? Why are they being like this? And then we can be empathic. We can see the world from their shoes. If someone see the world from their shoes, how is it for them? And then we think, oh my God, this person suffered because of this, that person struggled because of that. And because they're going through something, they're now putting it onto me. And when they put it on, we can start to feel compassion for them. The person that's hurt us, we can start to feel compassion for them because we're realizing where their pain is coming from. And when we realize where their pain is coming from, then we can really, really work on what the lesson is for us. And then we can appreciate that, Krishna, thank you for showing me who I am, because now I've seen how I've reacted. And because now I've seen how I've reacted, I'm beginning to see that I'm not as advanced as I thought I was. You know, I thought I'm a somebody. I thought I'm so big. And now I'm going blah, 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 blah. And I'm realizing, actually, I'm not so big. So maybe this is maybe one thing we can do. I hope that helps.
That helps tremendously. Thank you. I mean, journaling, yes. I mean, all the exalted personalities, you know, talk about journaling and the power of journaling. Thank you so much. It gives us that ability to introspect so nicely as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like this, you know, like we have our soul and we have our intelligence, and we have the mind and we have our senses. So our mind and our senses is like our impulsive self. We're acting on impulse. Pull, pull, do this, do that, do this, do that. But when we take time to reflect, and when we do some journaling and we write things down, then what happens is the soul and the intelligence, our reflective self, this is our reflective self, the reflective self gets stronger and then creates more of a distance with the impulsive self. And then what happens when you've got a distance between your reflective self and your impulsive self, when we have that distance, we're able to kind of coach ourselves. We're able to kind of see things and we're able to understand where and why these different situations are occurring.
Thank you, Kanchanabja Prabhu, for your wonderful class. We'll end it there.